What's up, fam? It's Chappelle back again for another episode of Recap Kickback, the podcast where I talk about whatever I want to talk about with all the people who I want to talk about it with. And with me, per usual, to talk about yet another one of these movies, to review another TV show, another entertainment property, my girl, my tag team partner, Mari Forth. Mari, what's up?
We're back. The doors are open to the kickback. The discussions will be had. I'm so excited to be here. Every week, I'm so excited to be here. And I just love doing these, I love doing these controversial properties and shows and movies. This might be our bag, you know. I really like the discussion aspects of stuff that Black Twitter can't agree on, you know.
Yeah, so I agree. I think that we have really made a habit of tackling topics that really, I guess, kind of force you to talk about and see and look at things from different angles, right? So in the past, Mari, you and I have talked about, we just finished talking about Good Times, Black Again, a show that, and a movie or a television show on Netflix that has not been received by the public as something that is positive, right? And we were able to sit down with Tyrone and we really talked it through, and we did find that there was some good and some bad and some other in between, you know, and your mileage may vary, but we did talk about the point of view that that show had given us. And I think even if y'all are listening to this, if you want to go check out the comments, I think some people involved the show have found our review and have had some positive things to say about it as well. They didn't agree with all our assessments because we were very honest about how we felt about it. But at the same time, they did agree with, you know, some of the direction we thought they were going. And they even have encouraged us to keep doing stuff like this. So that makes total sense. But in the past, we've talked about shows that had a lot of commentary to them as well. Specifically, for instance, Atlanta. Atlanta was a show we really dove into head first and talked about the social aspects of it, the societal issues that are in Atlanta, but also the comedy and these iconic Black cast and these very funny moments. And so that brings us to today, a time when we will talk about another movie that is riddled with some social commentary. And with us to do that, one of the people who helped us kick off this whole little partnership in the first place, from when we were talking about Atlanta, but from all of the other podcasts that we've done, we had to reach back and get our third musketeer, LaTanya Starks. Mm-hmm. LaTanya, welcome back.
It's so good to be back and to be back so quickly. I am honestly just trying not to take it personally that you asked me to come back here to talk about this.
What? LaTanya, I've been messaging you for months about we gotta talk about magical niggas when it come out.
That's very true. Which is the better title for it. I'm really glad to be back here with the two of you. I cannot think of anybody else that I would like to talk to more about this movie because we had to watch it. Honestly, I couldn't think of two people I'd rather be talking to.
Well, we are in luck because the team is back together and we do have a movie, a very controversial movie, as Mari called it, The American Society of Magical Negroes. We were reviewing this movie today and talking about perhaps why it was taken from movie theaters, why it is no longer being shown. Very quickly. Mm-hmm. I believe the movie had been out roughly a month and a half before people pulled the plug on it. And from what I could tell, a lot of people were not watching it. And so we watched it, so you don't have to. And we have a lot to talk about. First and foremost, please, again, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for your review, for your comments. We really appreciate everybody who shares the podcast, who lets everybody know about these conversations. If you come across something that we say and it's controversial or something that we say and you like it, share it with your friends. Let them know. Go to recapkickback.com. Leave us a 5-star review. Leave us some comments in our YouTube comments. Go hit that like button, smash subscribe, and let us know that you are appreciative or listening or not appreciative, whatever. But 5-star reviews only, okay? Because we want to get more people to find the podcast so we can get more feedback. Mari.
Yeah. And the Facebook group. Did you plug the Facebook group?
I didn't plug the Facebook group. Recapkickback.com/Facebook, our Facebook community. We're at Recap Kickback on all other social media platforms. YouTube.com/@Recap Kickback as well will lead you to our society of magical Negroes, I guess.
And other people.
and other folks too. Yeah, look, it's not exactly the cookout because everybody's welcome, but it's like cookout adjacent. It's the cookout where, you know, the one they want to keep inviting everybody to, this is essentially that. You know, it's going to be bad, but everybody can get a plate. I think that's how it's going to work. We all invited to the kickback, especially when it comes to talking about stuff like this. So, Mari,
yes.
The American Society of Magical Negroes. I remember when the trailer dropped for this one. We talked about how it was when the Good Times trailer dropped. Mm-hmm. Very similar energy, Mari.
Very that. I honestly would probably sue if I made this product, I would sue whoever made that trailer. Because that trailer was grossly misleading and not in a good way. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're supposed to have a grossly misleading trailer, it's supposed to be positive. Like, it's supposed to get more people into the seats. Like, we see that with, like, action movies all the time and stuff like that, or comedies where they show all the best jokes in the trailers. Like, this did the exact opposite. Not only did they make it seem like a smushy rom-com, but they definitely didn't get the satire across. Now, is that the trailer's fault for the satire part? I don't know, because for me, the satire wasn't strong enough in the movie itself. So maybe it was hard to get it in the trailer. But the trailer making it seem like a rom-com was stupid. Absolutely stupid. I mean, wow, that was bad. Like, and even me, who was like, okay, you know, this trailer is not good, but I am going to
give it a chance.
Try and eventually give it a chance and see what I thought. I overall thought the movie wasn't bad in comparison to what I thought. So, but it's like the bar is again in hell. So, I can't wait to really, really talk about it because honestly, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And that's that trailer's fault.
Mm-hmm. LaTanya, I kind of felt the same exact way Mari felt about this trailer when it came to the Good Times television show. Now, I don't think you've watched it yet, but the trailer was very much like, here's what the show is. And it was, you know, drug dealing baby and a bunch of poor people talking roaches and all that stuff. And you missed the idea that this is satire. But LaTanya, in this trailer, I agree. Well, Mari, I definitely did not realize in just the trailer that it was a satire because I thought this was a movie about a biracial young black man dating a white woman and using his magical powers to make sure that she was happy. That was me, LaTanya.
I thought that too, but I did also think because of the David Alan Greer of it all in the trailer that there was supposed to be some type of deeper mythology to this as well, just because of the title. And that kind of led me to, okay, maybe this is a satire, but I just already knew that it wasn't going to work for me. Mm-hmm. Like it just like everything about it felt earnest, but also very flat.
Yes. Yes.
Like it felt like I have some questions. Like I just want to know like whose idea was this? And who did you tell about it?
Wait, where was your friend that up? This was the screenwriter. It was written and directed by Kobe Libby. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly.
Mm-hmm. I think this person has four credits to their name.
Yeah, the comedian, acting writer, from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Yes, that is Kobe. Mm-hmm.
Madam Secretary. Interesting. So yes, that person is the person who wrote it and directed. If we're comparing this with Good Times took the satire like so far, like it kind of pulled like a Boondocks Cartman from South Park, where the satire was so satire-y that if you could take it wrong, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Absurd. Exactly. American Society of Magical Negroes did not take the satire enough. Like LaTanya said, there were parts that came off earnest. So it's like, you're earnestly telling me I need to live my life to make sure that white people don't get frustrated. You know, it just wasn't enough. And it's kind of annoying because I feel like there were some parts in there that I was like, see, this is the level of satire you should be at in this whole, throughout this whole entire movie. And I don't know if you want to get into that right now or whatever.
Yeah, I'm trying to hold back.
No. Let's continue our setup. We'll have plenty of time to talk about, you know, some things that we might have done differently. But start with the title of the movie, American Society of Magical Negroes. So the movie opens up with a title card that says, well, exactly what the magical Negro is. It's a trope in American cinema and literature as well, where basically your main white character or your white protagonist has a magical Negro sidekick who shows in, has mystical powers, has insight into stuff, has a lot of parables and catchy phrases that helps the white man or the white character then go on to do great things, and they look back fondly at the magical Negro. Now, of course, they use the word Negro to imply that it's a magical black character who's more like a Sambo type, you know, that kind of racist stereotype, noble, savage type situation where it's like, oh, he's got a good heart despite him being a little rough around the edges, you know, that kind of thing. Like, oh, you would never see that type of magic coming from this individual because, oh, they're a magical black Negro, that one. You know, a good example is the Green Mile.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but also because the trope is very old as well.
Yes, very old. Yeah, this has been going on for Huckleberry ages. Finn. Yes, right. Huckleberry Finn. Like I said,
the Strong Green of the South territory, like yes. Mary from Gone with the Wind. Like,
yes.
Like it's so old that we've moved past it in so many different ways that it almost questions credulity as to why you would make this the center of your movie.
Yes, yes. So yeah, calling it the American Society of Magical Negroes is a problem for a lot of the people who probably did not watch this movie. And I think just hearing it and then seeing the trailer really might make you feel like, okay, I'm confused as to what exactly is happening. Because when I heard American Society of Magical Negroes, I thought, okay, the title seems a little dated, but as Black people, we do that sometimes. You know, we'll have the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, right? Still in 2024. You know, so I was like, okay, I hear what you're saying. But my mind, LaTanya, went to, oh, this is going to be like a Black Harry Potter situation, right? Where we got our society, right. We got magic, Black folk. This is right. Going to be cool. But then to get presented with, but all your power needs to be presented to white people to make them feel uncomfortable. I'm like, that's not what I signed up for. That's not what I asked for when I said I want black magic.
One of the key things that sticks out to me from this movie is this quote, which happens early on in the movie. I don't blame white people. I blame their discomfort. And this happens after like a conversation wherein one of the characters is about to get jumped because it's believed that they, like, I think stole a white woman's purse.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, what are you talking about, though? What do you mean? Like, I don't blame white people. I blame their discomfort. To the point where there is an entire society that goes back to Monticello, which invoking that is a choice.
Choices.
I was gritting my teeth like this.
And then for you to just be like, you know, your sole purpose on this earth will be the comfortability of white people, and you will enjoy it. Because if you don't enjoy it, then the thing that makes black people special will go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very weird. Two things. One, seeing that name did not make me think Black Harry Potter. I don't know why y'all thought that.
No, I think when they saw it and they heard it was coming, they thought Black Harry Potter. I don't know how we got so offended. Yeah, I think we were hoping, Mari. Dang.
Okay, well, I don't know. Because
like, I didn't trust
it. It did make me think, like, you know how they said, like, they started off with the definition of magical Negro. That made me think, like, did people not know that? Because we are here immersed in media. We are like, we consume a lot of media. I am married to somebody who literally went to school for film. So the concept of the magical Negro in movies and television has been something known to me for years on end. So I'm wondering if, you know, there has to be an audience that did not know that, which is why they had to put that definition in the beginning, which mm-hmm. I think is appreciative. But if you don't push the satire enough, it just does not, it just comes off earnest. Like we said, like invoking Monticello with no wink and a nod, you know what I'm saying? Like invoking all of this stuff without it being for fun. It was just that was what really grated on me a lot. It was just like, especially when, let me say, the moment that I thought was very satirical is when he first goes to like one of the lessons and they're showing the holograms of back in this time period, this guy did this. And the mm-hmm. first scene is so stupid and again comes off so earnest, where the guy's like basically giving this white guy a pep talk to do billiards and pool. And I was like, what is this scene? There was nothing funny in that scene, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next one, they're invoking a hologram of a Green Mile-esque mm-hmm. Part where there's a big black man who is literally about to get like taken to his death. And he's sitting here comforting the prison guard who's taking him to his death. And then in the middle of talking to the prison guard, he grabs his crotch. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was funny. That showed me, it was like, it's base level humor, but I was like, I get it. Like, this is what we're saying when it's overly satirical. You know what I'm saying? Like we have to, like he magically touched his crotch to like make him feel better. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is the type of like over the top satire that I think they should have had throughout the movie. It was too much of it just came off way too serious. Like especially a lot of the interactions with the main character and David Alan Grier's character. I didn't know if you want to run down the characters, Chappelle.
Yeah, I do want to speak to what you just said too. I think that you're mm-hmm. right about how there were so many moments in this film that I think were so real, like so realistic that it wasn't funny because it's not.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so yes. The idea that white people being uncomfortable is dangerous to black people, that is a fact. But that's also, it's not funny. You know what I'm saying? It's right. not funny that it's not funny to us. Yeah, yes. It's not funny.
And it is also
literally unfunny.
Why is it that black men uniquely have the magic to make white men feel better about their penises? Like, what are
he,
you? What
I
is,
think he
what
made one guy fertile.
Say?
I think he actually was trying to make one guy fertile. Yeah, that second, the first crotch grab. I don't remember what the exciting incident was for that.
Yeah,
but the second one, the guy was like, "Yeah, I don't know. I'm going home to the missus, and I'm uncomfortable. I don't know." And he's like, "I got you, baby." And then he hit him with the crotch grab, and the magic wore off right around the same time. So he was just holding a handful of white men.
That was kind of funny. That was kind of funny.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, keep going, Chappelle.
Mm-hmm. But see, that's what you're talking about, though, Mari. Yeah, it's not realistic for me to grab a man's crotch to make him feel better about whatever. But
yes.
The idea that I have to be silent or to keep all of my feelings to the side or to move out of people's way when they're walking on the same sidewalk I'm walking on mm-hmm. to hold the door for 13 people as they come through the door, all that stuff is real. Because it happens every day. And so, you know, mm-hmm. you're really playing with a thin line between, are you just telling a story? Or is it supposed to be a funny story? Or is this supposed to be absurd? Because there are parts of it that are absurd. There are parts of them that are funny. And then there's this part that is just facts. This is just how it is. It is just us living life. And so I think, yeah, if they lean more into the funniness, even in those moments, like you talked about that first magical Negro we get to witness, he's talking about, he's teaching his white homie to shoot pool, you know, way back in the day. This guy is known for billiards. He's like, all right, Mr. Beauregard, let me show you something. He shows that my granny once told me that the man got the grip on his pool stick and knows I have a grip on life. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, and that was kind of just like, that was the punchline. And I was like, Jesus. Is it? Because that's just some normal stuff, you know, like like people try to make other people feel comfortable by giving them black words of wisdom from the past, from our black elders and stuff like that. Like, bro, we've been doing that. That's not funny. It's
the amount of things that haven't landed with you, though, Mari, is kind of the point.
Like, right. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Like
I didn't get it. I was like, there's no joke here. You
have to explain jokes.
Yeah.
And if you do have to explain jokes, then you have joked incorrectly. And you should probably stop trying to joke from here on out.
Right. Yeah. We're like, did you get it? It's a punchline on duct tape, you know?
And this is just the setup. I was really like taken aback at how like not funny as it was when it was supposed to be, which I found it was supposed to be funny. And some of the scenarios were just way too long, you know, still talking about the first scenario where the setup to the scenario was kind of funny because he's just sitting there at the ATM. This drunk white girl comes up to him and is like, hey, can you help me? And he's like, sure. And she's like, well, here's my card and here's my PIN. He's like, do not give me your PIN. And then she like, here, hold my purse. And it's like, okay, this is like, aha, this is kind of a funny situation. But then when she turns and tells these two white dudes like, hey, like I need help, and they're like, oh, he's trying to steal her purse, like that wasn't funny because like clearly he's scared that he's about to get beat up. He's 2 seconds away from getting beat up. And then this is where we get introduced to David Alan Greer. I was also sitting here like, was this a setup? Because where did those people come from? You know, I thought this was like a scenario, like
almost like a teachable moment.
Yes, like a training scenario as well.
I think it was. David Alan Greer's character, Roger, sees him at the art gallery because our main character, Aaron, is a sculptor. He makes yarn art. And very quickly, it's clear that Aaron is uncomfortable around white people. He's not able to move in those spaces. He's, you know, navigating them in a way that is guarded, you know, and that instead of trying to make them feel comfortable, he is like almost cowering from them. And there's even a moment where he's supposed to talk to a man who wants to buy his sculpture, and he can't even bring himself to say the words because the man passes him a drink and says, hey, could you go get me a drink? And rather than saying, no, I'm the artist, I need you to buy this, he said, okay, you know, and he goes and buys the drink. And so I think that alerts David Alan Greer's character, Roger, to saying, all right, maybe this is somebody I need to take under my wing and introduce them to the American Society of Magical Negroes. And that is really where we get started. Now, our main character, Justice Smith, plays Aaron. Are y'all familiar with Justice Smith from other stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
Books from...
Books. The Get Down. Yeah.
The Get Down. Loved him in the Get Down. I actually really like the Dungeons and Dragons as well. He was really good there.
He was in...
He's amazing.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to look for it.
Go ahead.
He was in...
Well, explain movie, the movie.
A TV show called Boyers as well.
Oh, yeah. I heard that
was
really
good. That was on Amazon Prime that I really enjoyed him in.
Detective Pikachu.
Yes,
I haven't seen that, but I know that you were in that for sure.
I'm gonna have to make JJ watch that. That was good. You would love that.
Well, look,
yeah,
Aaron is our protagonist in this, and he is biracial. He got a white mama, and they made sure to point that out.
Yeah.
and nobody was shocked in his role in this film. You know, Not to poke fun at Kobe Libby, our director and writer, but he also is biracial. And so I wonder if, you know, maybe it's like a cultural thing that, you know, because they talk about one of the other characters being a mixed ethnicity, that maybe that shapes the way that they navigate the world as well. Because, exactly. And I think that might also add a layer of context to, you know, the story that we're being presented and the actor chosen to present it. Mari, what did you think about Justice Smith as Aaron in this role?
I think Justice Smith did a great job for what he was given. I like him as an actor. After seeing the director, I'm like, literally the director just found a stand in for himself.
It's his son. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Justice Smith brought a good dynamic to the character, and I do think that his character was way more dynamic than you would have seen in the trailer. Because again, the trailer made it sound like, oh, because he fell in love with this white girl, now he want to bring down the whole system. But it was almost like, you said, what was the character's name? Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was almost like we were actually watching Aaron, like, slowly realize, like, why am I doing this? And it had nothing to do. It was a lot of development outside of the love interest, and it was a lot of natural development, to not want to be like a magical Negro. So I think he did bring a depth to the character. I actually think there's a lot of depth to most of these characters than what you would have initially thought just looking at the trailer.
Yeah. I agree with you for sure about Aaron and Justice Smith's portrayal of him. Because, yeah, I'm telling you, in that trailer, it did feel like, all right, we got a magical Negro here. Bet. Okay, but, there's a white lady that he likes and he needs to impress her. But what if he has to give up his magic to do that? You know, and now he's got, like, I need to do that. No, and then it was like, and now I need to take this one step further, and now I have to destroy all of this so that we can all experience our interracial love like we need to. And I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, that's what I took it. And I was like, I'm not watching this, you know? But again, it's a trailer, right? And so you don't get everything. So, because from this point of view, after watching the film, yeah, it very much came off like he was presented with logical information. Hey, white people being uncomfortable makes the block hot. It makes it unsafe for black folks. Mm-hmm. So thus, we have a team of black people who are here to make white people feel comfortable with their magic. The magic can only be used in service of white people, but it makes the world a better place. Thus, we see him trying to do the job and then realizing that white people being uncomfortable might not be the worst thing in the world for him, because he has to make himself uncomfortable constantly to make that happen. And he cannot get what he wants if he's always jumping through hoops for white people. And so, we go on the journey with him.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, it definitely wasn't let's tear it all down just so I can be with this white woman.
Yeah, that's but true. I think it gave that vibe, LaTanya.
Sorry,
I think it gave that vibe, LaTanya. Yeah, I was definitely shocked when I was like, oh, that lady ain't even really white, you know?
Yeah,
I was like,
she's not white. I was just about to say, like,
the white man character. Yeah, he said she wanted him. So
I think one of my issues is that no one had any chemistry with anyone in this movie.
I thought they were cute.
I thought they were very cute.
Yeah, really? I thought it was cute.
Yeah.
Because you know, like, I honestly just feel like that's just Justice Smith at a baseline level. Like he could have charisma with like a parking meter. And he's just kind of like genuinely kind of funny in his own little way as well. Mm-hmm. Which makes him endearing. That's one of the reasons why he's had the career that he has in such a short period of time. But I didn't feel like there was a lot of like back and forth here at all with either his love interest character, or in the other way, like the relationship with his like coworker who was also supposed to be in love with her, I guess.
Which I thought was good. Can I so this like act two is after Justice Smith after Aaron has gone over like a little bit of training, he is then assigned to this white dude at Meatbox Facebook. This is the other part where I was like, the satire is satiring. This is, you know, why are we not here the whole time? Yeah.
Which is called Meatbox.
Yeah, it's called Meatbox. but like I'm talking about the owner, and we'll get to him. But but it's supposed, I'm thinking it's a stand-in for all social media, because it's just a social media platform. And he's at this office where they don't believe in regular titles, and there's like pool tables and shit everywhere. It's the typical, like, you know, Silicon Valley, not an office, whatever. And he's assigned to this white guy. What's the white guy's name, Chappelle?
That would be Jason in the movie. Jason. He's portrayed by Andrew Tarver.
That actor didn't look familiar to me.
Drew Tarver is from the other two. I know. Mm-hmm.
Do not watch that, but I know the show.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I'm concerned. I'll talk about it later because he's so good in the other two.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, I believe that's his only lead role as well, Mari. So don't feel bad because I think he's been in a few movies, but I think that's his biggest role as the other two.
Yeah.
Perfect. So this is where he's assigned to I forgot his name already.
Jason.
But I like the fact that he bumps into Lizzie, the character. He bumps into her first, and they have this like little meet cute at the coffee shop. And it's
meat box. Cute. It's all...
Huh?
They had a meat box at the coffee shop.
Anyways, it was cute, flirting, banter, awkward, nerdy. Yeah, Justice Smith style meet. And then he meets Jason. Jason is the one he's supposed to be like making feel good, and then he realizes like, oh, Lizzie's here too. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And even him and Lizzie continue to have like their flirting session and stuff like that before Jason is even made aware to like her. But what I actually really liked about the dynamic was like they like she didn't like him. She was definitely I like that she was aware of her other heritage. She was kind of like the us, I would say, the audience stand-in, mm-hmm. in a sense of like, why am I trying to make him feel good? The kind of, if you know, the woke character, if you will. She was the one who was pointing out all the hypocrisies about the office and how Jason's getting handed stuff he doesn't deserve. I mean, honestly, again, if you had put a black woman in this role, I mean, but whatever. So she, I like that she is like aware of these things. I felt like the trailer really made it seem like really surface and all of that. And then I like that Jason is like, oh, you want me to be with her? Like, and that there is no chemistry there. It's almost like he's entitled to like ask her out and be with her. Like he called dibs, but she don't like him. He barely likes her. And then we get Jason's character being so entitled and being so obnoxious and being so unaware of his privilege, which is what pushes Aaron closer and closer to like, why am I doing this? Why do I give if this asshole feels comfortable or not? You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I actually really like the dynamic between the three of them because it's not what I thought of from the trailer. I legit thought the trailer made it seem like, oh, Jason is going to be so dopey and he's a white guy. He's going to need the help. And, you know, we're going to have to baby him. You know what I'm saying? And the love interest is just so nice. She lights up a room and da-da-da-da-da-da. But, like, both of them had way more depth because she could see what was going on in the company that was unfair and how both her and Aaron were being treated. And he was just a douchebag. So I really liked him being a douchebag, like Jason being a douchebag, so that Aaron doesn't want to magical Negro for him. So that's what I'll give the actual movie kudos for.
Yeah, I enjoyed Aunt Lee in this role as Lizzie. I haven't seen her in a lot of stuff. So I think she's a relatively new, like, I'm not going to say like, she's like a fresh start, but you know, like I haven't seen her mainstream, but I could very much see her in the future being in a lot more roles. Cause she was very good at this, but yeah, like we've mentioned, she's Taiwanese and Irish. So she is a mixed ethnicity as well, but at the same time, you know, when I think, like I said, in the trailer, it looked like she was presenting as a white woman. And so if you were telling me the role of this man is to make white folk feel good, and, you know, then he's got this magic, but you can't do the magic, you know, if it's not helping the white people or it's going to go away. And then this is the white woman. And you're like, oh my God, is he throwing all away his magic for this? Like, are we really doing this right now? Like, that's really the energy that I was seeing online. It's like, really? You gonna give us powers so that we can then be oppressed, actively oppressed, and even happily oppressed, a lot of them, because it's for the greater good. So that is exactly what the setup is. He's assigned to Jason. Lizzie is the love interest, and very quickly we see that he has eyes for her, and that she potentially has eyes for him. But Jason has to, he has some wants as well, right? He's, his white tier meter has been going off, Latanya. His white reaching a maximum capacity, and that means they had to send in the magical Negro emergency squad. They couldn't get it done there, so they sent in this fresh upstart.
They couldn't figure out what was making him white teary.
Right, because they couldn't figure out why he was so upset. So they sent him in kind of like a mission to make this happen. And he initially thought that he just wanted to be the new guy in charge. He wanted to be like the Mick character who would be our Mark Zuckerberg type Facebook type tycoon type character. But in reality, he had multiple things that he wanted because that's what white men do sometimes. They just want everything and they think they're entitled to everything. And it's his time to give him what he wants. And what he wants is his work wife, Lizzie, to be his girlfriend, Latanya. That's pretty much the plot in a nutshell, no?
Yeah, that kind of is the plot, which makes me question how. Like, how did this end up getting made? I really just don't understand, because the thing that you said before about the preview making it seem like X, Y, and Z were going to happen, X, Y, and Z still did happen in this movie. Like, they had people who were like Ivy League people whose days were being thrown off because they weren't able to properly cater to the white people that they were like supposed
to. Yeah, we got to talk. That is definitely something we have to talk about as well. But I don't know. I kind of disagree, because I don't think how I interpreted the movie, I don't think it was mainly the Lizzie thing that he wanted and was making him white tears. It was revealed later that during the meatbox session, we get the founder coming on, and the founder is like loosely talking around an incident that Meatbox has gotten themselves into that they need to get themselves out of.
Ghanagate.
It's very funny. Like, this is the one part that was like truly really funny, again, because you could tell the satire is over the top, because you have a billionaire CEO who's trying to apologize for a situation that they're not really apologizing for, that they don't even understand how it really happened. But basically, Meatbox started something and whole areas in Ghana can't access Meatbox because they basically, like, something about the recognition software doesn't...
Their facial recognition doesn't recognize black folk. Which is actually a true thing.
Factual.
But it's funny because it's like a whole, like, country just doesn't... Their whole faces don't get... And then on top of that, the apology was like, we're aiming for new... It's technically what's happening right now, you know, with all the DEI stuff. And it's like, we're coming up with new innovative ways to do the same thing that we've done. Like, he even says that, like, that's one of the lines, like, we need to find new innovative ways to do the same mission statement.
I got the quote, Mari. It was, we're getting a new logo. We're getting a new slogan and a new commitment to the exact same values that got us here. Like, that's the part where that's the part that feels like that's satire, but also, ooh, that's close to home.
Yes, that's that good satire where it's close to home, it's funny, and it makes sense. And I thought that was hilarious. Come to find out that Jason was on the team that caused Ghanagate. And we find this out because he goes out with Lizzie and Aaron, and Lizzie is complaining about Ghanagate because, again, she has some depth to it. She's like, I can't believe we're a part of a company who did something so, you know, really bad and all this stuff. And as she's saying that, Jason's in there like, well, we didn't do it on purpose. And we found out that he was a part of that team. And he's like, yeah, we probably should have had some people of color on that team, but what can we do? And immediately we see Aaron go into like protection mode, like trying to coddle him. And we see Lizzie do it too. Both of them. We know that she's not a part of the Magical Negroes. And when they have a conversation in the car later, it again just kind of double reinforces, like, why do we need magical Negroes to make white people or white men feel better when honestly in regular society that is also drilled into regular society's head?
Yeah.
So I love that kind of learning and contrast there as well. I think all of the best parts of this movie is the interaction with the three main characters to me, because all of the stuff with the magical Negroes falls through because it's not pushed enough to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you make some good points, especially when it comes to the, you know, even the conversation they had about how the reflex is to make white people comfortable. You know, it's not like you have to wake up as a black person and say, how do I make white people comfortable today? It's just that when something happens and you see them get uncomfortable, you react because you want to protect yourself, right? Roger David Allen Greer's character talks about how, you know, even his father at one point when he was a wee lad saw his father get spat on. And he said his dad had a temper. His dad never backed down from a fight, but his dad in that moment did. He did not say anything. He kind of just brushed it off and went on by his day. And it broke him up. And Roger was crying. Yeah, because he saw his dad smile through getting spat on. And he goes to talk to his grandmother about it. And his grandmother tells him, and I mean, this is a magical Negro story, so I kind of chuckled at it because, again, imagine that. Somebody telling you, well, Granny once said, but that's what he did. He said, my grandma told me. I mean, your dad was able to come home and live again, you know, to, you know, live a life and raise you based on that interaction. And so you're like, oh, okay, cool. I see why you would feel this way, because white people being uncomfortable a lot of times is detrimental to black lives. It just is. The problem is, what do you want to paint a movie or a film in a world like that, that dictates a world where that is the extent of our magic, that is the extent of our blackness, is making sure that we can survive normal interactions with white people on a day-to-day basis. And I was like, that for me is like, that is why people are like, I'm not watching this, because as a black person, I don't need to be reminded that I have to go above and beyond to help white people without even thinking about it. Sometimes there are things that we do and say in certain rooms, the code switching that we do instinctively. I don't need a movie to tell me that that I'm doing it, that I need to do it, that there's a society of people doing it, and that you could be magical, but only if you're doing that. Like it just felt like there was not enough satire in that for me.
It was so weird. Yeah. Like she says, regret is for white people, you know, and that when his dad comes home, there's no regret because he made it home. And the daddy story was like a respectability politics story to me. It's like it was upholding respectability politics and stuff. And I was just like, what is this? Like, who is this for? LaTanya, who is this for? Because I don't think it's for us at this point.
Damn, if I know who it's for, like, I feel like I'm glad that we're getting to this part of the podcast, because I feel like you all have been really generous so far with your reading of this movie. And I just don't have it in me to do it, because like the nerve of doing something like this and then like directing it toward a black audience while giving no I mean, there's a line in here that goes something like, I'm going to teach you something that's going to help the black people more than a million like BLM marches.
Yeah.
I do remember that. Oh,
that's just irresponsible.
That's what I'm saying.
You just shouldn't get allowed, like get away with saying stuff like that. I just don't understand how no one at any point of this process said, hey, we need a tone check. We need a reread for like safety, essentially. Like
a trigger warning.
Like this whole thing should have a massive trigger warning for just about especially for every scene that we get in the actual society. Like that stuff is just ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like I'm really wondering if this was for a white audience. Like trying to get a white audience to understand what black people go through.
But that's because worse.
Yes, because they're not exactly, that is even worse, because it's not for us. Like we said, it's not for us. all of these situations that they have put him in and stuff like that was stuff that we live on a daily basis. This preaching to the camera about, you know, making it home, because if you don't do that, we know this. We know all of this. So that's where my second leap of logic has to be. Okay, this has to be for white people. And to like try and teach them something. And it makes sense that you lose your black audience, because like Chappelle mm-hmm. so poignantly pointed out, me as a black person, I don't want to know that my magic is tied to white comfortability. Sorry, mm-hmm. Chappelle, what were you about to say?
No, I agree. I agree 100%. LaTanya, you and I, we've talked about several different things that we've had to point out these moments of where it's like, did you have to do that? You know? And I think that, like, for instance, they said Meatbox was jokingly talking about its diversity campaign and what it had been doing to address some of the racial inequities in the country. They had 22 Black-owned vendors. They suspended operations for 12 hours during the George Floyd protests. I'm like, see, it's like I hear you, but at the same time, you should have just made up somebody, because that's a real life situation. Like that's somebody's. It is, especially because a lot of companies did do something like that, and they felt like that mm-hmm. was good enough. Like, oh yeah, we took a knee. What are you talking about? You know, we went on to yes. you know, put up our black box, leave us alone. And like I said, yes. while that can be funny to point out, I don't think it was funny when they pointed out here. I just don't think it landed.
For me, it landed, because I think that was where it was like, really, y'all stopped production for like that. That to me was pointing the satire in the right direction, like at mm-hmm. the stupid companies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I didn't even think about, like, you know, name dropping like George Floyd and stuff like that. But
I thought it's just a little gross.
Yeah, I know why. Yeah. Yeah, but I do you agree that that's at least the most satire-y aspect of the movie?
I agree that it is when the satire is pointed in the right direction. And I want to talk to y'all specifically about this, because we did talk about Atlanta, and there were episodes like White Fashion and Rich Wigger, Poor Wigger, that they talked about race, and they talked about mm-hmm. it in a way where it sounded like, oh, okay, this is satire, but this is saying, look, white people, at what you do. As opposed to look, black people, at what you do all the time for the enjoyment of white people, right? So they were talking about, there's one episode where they talk about reparations, and it is painted mm-hmm. in a lens as to black people are getting reparations now how white people are going to react when they are on the other end of being what they feel like is oppressed, or like they are not going to be heard in these moments, and they're going to have to spend a lot of money and pay for the sins of their ancestors. And, you know, and you look at it through the eyes of the white man who is being victim to this. Whereas in this movie, LaTanya, I felt like the black people were still the victims throughout the entire movie. Dear God, I mean, if you stuck up for your stuff, you lost your magic.
The whole time, you lost your magic and you had your memories erased, which apparently they said was the equivalent to brain damage. So mm-hmm. they inflicted brain damage upon you. If you had the nerve to speak up against a white person and tell them even like a tenth of what you should probably be telling them in that moment.
Yes.
Your powers were taken away, and you ruined it for everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that this part of the movie, it's like where they call everybody to the thing. They're like, the powers are, something's happening with the powers. Again, in the trailer, it made us think that it was, you know, Aaron, him trying to run away with the white girl is what, but in the movie itself here, it's like, oh, what happened? Our powers are going. Somebody, one of you stood up for yourselves. And then one of the only black women in the movie who talks other than Tanya. Like Aisha Hines
Nicole Byer. Yeah.
Nicole Byer, who is amazing. Like, she's like, yeah, okay. So like, the white guy I'm with, he does everything wrong, and I kind of cursed at him a little bit. And they're like, oh, and then they're like, yes, we have to take your powers and erase your mind, and you're going to be the worst thing you can be, a regular black person in America.
Without the ability to make white people comfortable.
That's not funny.
Like, Aaron's joking. yeah, it's you're not going to remember a thing. You might walk out of your house into the middle of a KKK rally or whatever, or like an actual Nazi. It's like, that's not funny.
That's not funny.
Not funny.
Like, what, where is the funny part?
I laughed at a single part that happened in this movie. I shit you not. I did not laugh at anything that happened in this entire movie.
I had a good healthy laugh at Nicole Byer not being able to float in anymore because the Black Power was gone. And so she had to walk in with that ladder and then climb up the ladder. I had a good laugh at that. But aside from that, no, I went through LaTanya. A lot of the jokes, like I got the satire in certain parts and I understood that it was satire throughout. But again, if the joke's not funny, I'm not going to laugh. And I love to laugh. If you're listening to this, you know me, I'd be hollering. And so for me to go through this and be like, yeah, I remember that one time I laughed. It's not great. It's not great. So for this to be a comedy, I think that that's probably where, for me, the biggest point where it missed the mark, right? Like, I think that if this is satire, if this is comedy, if this is supposed to be funny, if we're supposed to, as Black people, supposed to be watching this and enjoying this, I would love to see the part that was supposed to be enjoyable to Black people specifically.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, tell me that part. Tell me the part as Black folk, we supposed to be high-fiving and being like, you know it, you see it, because you get it, because there's none of that. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like, yeah, damn. Yeah, that's true. There it is.
Speaking of having to bring in the chair, the one guy went to Cornell and the other guy went to, what was it?
Dartmouth.
Like, so all of the magical Negroes are people who are like educated, elite.
They're very educated. Like, I mean,
I don't like that.
We saw people in scrubs. Like, when we had, like, emergency meetings, we, like, you know, the person whose memory that they erased was a STEM. Yeah, a woman in STEM.
I think her name was Toya.
Yeah. Fantastic.
It's like, also a little, like, again, it's like a nerve push in the wrong direction. It's like pointing out Black elitism, and that Black elitism is...
where the magic resides.
Into the magic. Yeah. It's
cause,
like,
because you could go be normal, Mari. If you make white people be like uncomfortable, we'll snatch them degrees from you and make you go be a normal Black person in the United States.
Right. It's something about that don't feel right.
It does not feel right
as a well-educated person. Something about that does not land for me. And that's why I said all of the scenes at the magical Negro place was just not it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of other scenes, but I again maybe I know LaTanya says like we're giving it too much. Like I said, I think it's just because I was pleasantly surprised, because I was going into it thinking I was going to get something different, that I was able to find some aspects of it better. And again, it's kind of funny because the aspect that I found better watching, as in like the interaction with the three people, was the part that I thought I would hate the least. From the trailer, because I thought it was going to be some stupid triangle, because after this we get the scene where like the company's touting diversity, but Lizzie does all the work on this new campaign, but they ask her to step aside because they want Jason to do the presentation. So they're not even learning from what's going on.
And he doesn't even do the presentation. He does a draft and then he sends it over to Aaron,
so he can work his magic.
Right,
so he can work his magic. It's like, and for Lizzie to get put aside, her knowing it, I do like that she is pointing all this stuff out. I like that portion because we could have just got another oblivious, you know, non-Black person in this movie, but we got somebody who does see what's going on. Now, is it in the bent of racism or is it in the bend of, you know, women? We can talk about that later. But Jason then being like, yeah, you know, they're doing the video games, and Jason's like, yeah, I got it because I'm clearly better, and him having this moment of entitlement, and Aaron increasingly like getting upset with him, like, but you were told you could always do it. He's like, yeah, of course I was always told. Like him trying to get him to realize his privilege without telling him the privilege.
Yeah, let me set that up for everybody who didn't watch the movie, because we're assuming if you're listening to this, you didn't watch the movie because nobody did. They took the movie down. Okay, so welcome to my TED Talk. After here it is.
3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks and it was gone. So here we are. Looked it up. So when we get to one of the big moments of the film, we do see that Jason has been benefiting from the privilege of knowing Lizzie, who is doing some rock star work at the company, knowing Aaron, who is magical and making things happen for him. And he's starting to feel himself. He's like, well, obviously I've earned these things because I'm getting them. And so Aaron, who is into Lizzie, he's very much into the Lizzie part of this. He's like, all right, Lizzie needs to get something from this. I can't get nothing from this, but I want to do something for Lizzie. Maybe I can convince Jason to share his presentation with Lizzie, because we know Lizzie did all the work and she's getting passed up over by Jason because he is a presentable white man for this role. When presented with that information, Jason takes offense and like, I don't understand why I would bring Lizzie on, because that wouldn't be fair to her. And when he said that, I thought, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
And he said, well, if I give her something she doesn't earn, then that's not going to help her. That's only going to harm her. And he doesn't even understand or comprehend the idea that there could be other aspects of his life or his privilege that allowed him to experience this level of success. I mean, we see it in the movie. Lizzie's doing a lot of the work. Aaron's doing a lot of the work. Jason is reaping all the benefits and thinking, yeah, it's because I'm white and I'm supposed to reap these benefits. Like, he doesn't think it's because I'm white. It's me. I've done the work. I'm exceptional. You know, all these other people I'm stepping over, they don't really matter. And this is the thing that sends Aaron over the edge and ends up with him getting pulled into the American Society of Magical Negroes, because at this point he is starting to move away from his responsibilities to make white people feel comfortable. There is the moment at the presentation where Jason really needs Aaron to be a part of the presentation, because the presentation is, spoiler alert, about diversity. He tells Aaron, hey, you got to be a part of this because, you know, diversity reasons, right? And he's looking at him like, you black, we need you on, like, we need you to help smooth this over. We need you to be the face of, hey y'all, Meatbox isn't racist. Our AI does work for black people. We don't hate Ghana, you know? And so this is the moment that sticks with him the most. Aaron is sitting there thinking, I'm letting the girl that I like get, you know, be with you. I'm letting all of these accolades that she and I are supposed to be racking up, you get them. And then you're going to tell me I'm a diversity hire in every sense of the word. So he comes in and he tells Jason that he is not happy. He is not okay with what he just said. He is not okay with taking the blame for this. And he's going to speak up for himself. And it is in a heated exchange, LaTanya. I'm talking about, I believe it went something like this. Aaron said, I didn't like the way that made me feel. Because it made it sound like to me that I only got hired because of diversity reasons. And I feel like I earned this job. And Jason responds, well, that would mean I'm racist and I'm not racist. So that didn't happen. And that is the entire argument, LaTanya.
Oof. Just the gaslightery
Lactations.
It was a wild statement to hear, just like come out of another person's mouth. Just, you know, if you're saying that, then you're saying a bad thing about me, and that can't be about me because I've never done or said or even wondered a bad thing. Nope. Especially not about race. There's not a racist bone in my whole body. I think it's something that's even said.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah. And he's like, I don't want to talk about your non-racist skeletal.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was decent wordplay.
He doesn't physically know how to react to this though, LaTanya. Aaron is hearing that he's saying, I feel a way. And what Jason is taking from that is, you're accusing me of being a type of person. And those two things are not the same.
Yep.
No. I think that this scene is probably the most nuanced the movie ever got, for sure, because I think that everybody, just from existing in life, has had that conversation before, at least 7,000 times. And I'm just talking about this year alone. So that all felt very authentic, for lack of a better word. Like, it felt like, you know, way more we're in on the joke here, because like we realize that this isn't a joke, because this is something that we have to like actually defend ourselves in this way all of the time. So this also felt really earnest in its own way. But it was definitely the most complicated, complex, dynamic, like any of those things that we saw a discussion about race be in this entire movie about race. And that's saying a lot, you know. It's kind of like how, you know, how everyone is like, well, the Barbie movie is the most feminist movie that has existed in the history of time. And it's like, what? Didn't it just say feminism exists? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't deserve credit for doing this necessarily, but given that there's so little credit to give to the rest of the movie, this really is a standout scene. It's acted really well by Justice Smith, and you get the idea that the guy from the other two, that Jason, was doing his best to channel just like the douchiest dude bro that he'd ever met.
This was like one of the best parts. I think I rewound it a few times because the frustration building in Aaron. First, Aaron is just ignoring his calls because he's like, I need to find Lizzie. I don't care about this stupid presentation. I don't care about you. He is like lured to the presentation by Jason to help him. And then when he gets there, all of that unravels. And for Aaron, that frustration, it was like that built up frustration that a lot of us have felt before. Mm-hmm. And just the talking over each other, like them having two different, which shows the juxtaposition of the two conversations they're having. Like Chappelle said, these are two different conversations going on. And I loved how they filmed it because Aaron is like, I'm just telling you how I'm feeling. It just happened. And you're trying to tell me that it didn't happen. He's like, it just happened. Meanwhile, Jason is like, I'm not racist. I don't have a racist bone in my body. I didn't agree with slavery. Like, he was just saying all this. Just
the ridiculous canned
comment. Yeah. And I just, I really did like this part of the movie. I like that Aaron didn't stop once the cameras come to him, and he really just starts outing the company and stuff. And he's like, you know what? I'm going out. And I don't understand. I don't know if Chappelle talked about it, but I don't understand the transporting Lizzie to the Empire State Building thing. But yeah. I thought that the ending here was very interesting. And I thought it was authentic because we saw Aaron's character building to this from the beginning. Like, it wasn't just one thing that set him off here. It was a multitude of things, and it was things that a lot of us can relate to, especially in the work environment.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing that comes up that I cannot relate to. So in this moment, Aaron is definitely doing the, I felt a way. I didn't like that. You're supposed to be my friend. Let's talk about it. And Jason is saying, if we friends, you shouldn't even be accusing me of something like that. So what are we're shutting this down right now. They're not meeting on any playing field. Jason's bringing up slavery. Aaron's talking about not being seen. And he says, you are not my friend. You don't like that I'm seeing, you don't listen to me, and you don't like that I take up space. And I'm like, he cooking. He does that. That is true. And then Aaron says something to the effect as, I didn't even know I deserve to be alive. I've been alive for 27 years, and I'm just starting to understand that I deserve to be alive. And I believe Jason says, I never knew that until now. And I thought, no, I can't relate to that. I'm sorry. Because I don't know. don't know if that's their way of like really putting a cap on that's the conversation, right? Like Black people, maybe some Black people don't appreciate their own identity just because it's always in proximity to white people, right? Like, who are you? Not the white person's magical Negro. And if not the person moving out the way for the white person, making them feel better, make, you know, or like, you know, you're reacting to whiteness a lot of your time. Maybe that's what they're trying to say. But for me, that line just did not hit me at all. I was like, I got nothing.
Don't know that life.
Can't relate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the magical parts of all of the story. I mean, obviously, he breaks the rules. They take him back to the American Society of Magical Negroes. Nicole Byer's character is pissed because she can't float in like she normally does. She has to be carried in, or she has to walk in and then climb a ladder, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, Aaron admits to saying, hey, I kind of sabotaged my white partner's presentation. I told him about himself because he colonized my girlfriend. I liked somebody first, and then he came in and liked them, and then I had to give them up, and I'm not okay with that. And so he is still banished, and his memory is not wiped clean, though, because Roger, David Alan Grier's character, does say, all right, I can't really do this. Well, he actually tries. He tries a couple times, but I think there was still some glitching because a lot of the other magical Negroes had picked up on what Aaron was saying and said, huh, maybe I too should speak up for myself. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of them who were like one who was famously grabbing a white man's crotch. He was saying, hey, sometimes it's okay for you to wipe. You can grab my crotch too. It's okay. You know, this could, we can reciprocate. You scratch mine, I can scratch yours, Latoya.
It's just a dumb joke. Like
I found it very funny. I'm not gonna lie. Very low hanging fruit. Sorry. Low hanging fruit.
Yes.
In every sense of the word.
I had no goodwill left at this point. I had no goodwill left.
That guy looked familiar too. I think he's like a comedian or something.
By that point, all I knew is it was my eighth time looking at the clock to see how much longer of this movie there was. And I didn't have any more goodwill left for it at that point. I didn't. I'm glad that you got some enjoyment out of it. That's always great.
Sorry, keep going, Chappelle.
No, I'm looking up this gentleman who's grabbing people's nets. So you can go ahead.
Yeah, so, he transports Lily to the top of the Empire State Building. I realized they were in L.A. That was so weird. Like, his memory doesn't get wiped. Him and Lizzie walk off into the sunset. She's like, you got powers and all this stuff. But, like, the ending's very ambiguous. And, like, yes, some of the magical Negroes are like, maybe I don't want to do this. But we don't know what happens. Like, I don't know. It was very ambiguous ending, I guess, in a sense.
Well,
it's just like Aaron's done with it, so
yeah, he quit the job. He essentially is done. The magical Negro in question, Mari, I know you're gonna recognize him once I say it. His name is, he plays Anthony Holmes on the show Grand Crew.
Yes.
Only a show Mari texts me every other week to say, you should watch this. And then I never do. And I'm like, Mari, have you seen this show, Grand Crew? And she's like, I told you to watch it. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. You crazy. that's Kwame. But yeah, the movie ends. Mm-hmm. Aaron quits his job and he goes and finds Lizzie and says, hey, Lizzie, by the way, I remember that crazy thing I did where I teleported you to the Empire State Building, even though we live in L.A.? Yeah, so just, I was a part of a magical society, but I quit, and that's over with. And Lizzie says to him, yeah, that's crazy. I'm a part of a magical society, too. And he's like, girl, stop playing. But we see, after the sunset and after the screen wipes to black, Lizzie does enter the headquarters of SOSWAG, the Society of Supportive Women, Wives and Girlfriends. And so this entire time, big plot twist, Lizzie, too, is a part of a magical society to make white men feel good. And that's your movie. Thoughts? Tepid response.
She wasn't a wife or a girlfriend of anybody.
No. She was a work wife. Work wives count, Mari. Okay. Let's stop. Let's cut it out.
We're getting in on a technicality.
Also, now I think she's Aaron's girlfriend. So I think she still has the clock in.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I thought. I was picking up notes of a little bit of, like, again, a little bit of feminism. It's like whatever. That's not a.
You know what that tells me? That tells me that they thought this movie was going to get a sequel.
Oh, like, so the next one was like American Society of Magical Negroes 2, Wives and Girlfriends Strike Back.
Right.
So Swag Edition. Yeah.
Exactly. It's Cruise Control.
Yeah, Cruise Control. You know, so the plot twist I thought was pretty cool. I thought like, oh, okay. But again, I think that the moments where Lizzie is being a supportive wife or girlfriend, I think that those are the moments where she is like, those are the most subtle parts, because again, it's just her naturally acquiescing to what Jason wants throughout the film. And it's the same thing with Aaron. Like, they both are like, oh, whoa, we weren't calling you racist. No, we weren't saying that the meatbox is racist for not having the AI. You know, they talk about it like, hey, that's what we just default to. And it sucks that we have to default to that as people. But now that I find out that SoSwag at the end is another magical agency, I'm like, dang, even the women can't have magic without having to, you know what I'm saying? Like, bruh.
No.
Crazy. But yeah, that's the movie. I mean, that's it. To Mari's point, she said this a couple times. I don't think the trailer does it any justice, Smith. I think that it puts them in a position where if you only watch the trailer, you're not going to watch the movie a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And then if you watch the movie, I think there's a lot there, but I also think they missed the mark in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm sure somebody loves this movie. I have not found that person yet, LaTanya.
I feel like this trailer kind of did the opposite of what the original Suicide Squad trailer did for it. Remember how trash that movie was, but the trailer was so good.
Everything.
Exactly.
This did the exact opposite. It was just like, well, strike that, reverse it. And here's your trailer.
LT, would you ever recommend this movie for anybody?
No. Honestly, no. Like, who?
Yeah. Like, but the reason I ask,
when I recommend things, I want people to want to come back to me and be like, wow, what a good recommendation. I'm so glad that I spent my time on this. Wise time spended. Well done, you. I don't want them to be like, you should die.
like, please leave me alone.
Never speak to me again.
Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, like we said, the trailer is not a direct parallel to the movie. In a lot of ways, they're not even similar. And so I asked that question to say, like, is there enough from the movie that you think is beneficial to be watched? Or if you're like, we should just bin it all together. It sounds like a resounding no from LaTanya. But Mari, you seem to have kind of like mixed feelings about it. How do you feel about maybe telling other people to watch the movie and giving it a shot?
You know what I said about Good Times last week is like, I never want to tell people not to watch something because I don't prefer it. Everybody has their own taste. If you've gotten this far to us and you want to now, you know, give it a shot. But would I watch this again? No. No, I wouldn't watch it again.
Barely watched it the first time.
Exactly. Like, I just think it missed the mark on so many things, like who the audience was, the satire aspect of it all, or lack thereof. And again, the only reason why I actually did like the interaction of the three main characters is because I thought I was going to get something completely different. Going into it. So when I got what I got, I was like, oh, this is so much better than what I was expecting. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So again, the bar started off, the expectations were so low that honestly, I think you could only go up. And I was able to find some bits and pieces to go up, unlike LaTanya, where who did not like. I get it. Like the scenes in the Magical Society were upsetting. Like, they're generally upsetting and all of that it just overtakes anything else. So I completely get that. So again, I you know, beware and buy at your own peril, drink responsibly. Like, it's up to you. Like, there are grown adults listening to this. Like, if you want to watch it, go watch it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
If you want to go watch it, find a link because it's not in theaters. So good luck.
Right. Exactly. Like, so it was all right. It was all right. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, I guess.
I wish I could be the highest on this movie, but I think I'm kind of like, I'm closer to the Lasagna end of this one and then Mari. Because I'm just like, I hear what you're trying to do, but you can't. Yeah, but see, my thing with Good Times is that there were moments where I thought were kind of funny. I didn't think this was too funny in too many parts. No. And I think that's the big difference. Because I do understand that you're telling this story. I feel like there's a point of view here. I feel like it's trying to get across the idea of the absurdity of Black people only being able to use their magic to help white people, and the absurdity that white people can't even see that a lot of times people, minorities, women, people are just jumping out of the way to make life easier for them, because when they get uncomfortable, people feel unsafe. Like, that is very much like the through line of the story. Now, I just don't think they execute it in a way that I felt like, okay, that was entertaining. I felt like I watched it, I saw it, I didn't rip my eyes out, but I'm definitely not like, hey, you need to go watch this. There were some parts I thought were pretty like clever. I really did. One part was when they were talking about the rules of trying to keep your Black powers, right? And I thought this is what Mari was talking about. They were pointing the satire back at the white people. It was saying, remember, it's always about the client. It's only acceptable to white people. If it's not acceptable to whites based off of their perception of Blackness, it don't count. And I started to think of how many different ways it's like where white people will legitimately tell you that you're not Black enough. And you're like, what do you mean? It's like, oh, well, you're not like the other ones. Why? In what way? You know, you're one of the good ones, you know, those types of conversations. Yeah. And it's very much like, yeah, that's stuff that we hear as Black people and we hear it all the time and we roll our eyes at it. But as a white person, if I'm watching this, I'm thinking, damn, my dude, I kind of do that sometimes, you know? So I like when they are like, hey, hold the mirror up and say, look at this. When in a lot of these spots, I feel like they were not holding the mirror up. It was just them making a conversation about something that we already knew. So that said, it was fun talking to y'all about it. You know what I'm saying? Right. Always good to have interesting conversation with the panel.
Before we wrap it up, I have to bring it back to something we did all talk about, American Fiction.
Yes.
American Fiction did a great job of balancing the seriousness with the satire of what was going on in American Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe just the comedy of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was something, like, maybe that's what Magical Negroes was going for, but they completely missed the mark.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, that's very true. And one of the many reasons that, you know, Cord Jefferson is the visionary filmmaker that he is because he's able to walk a tightrope like that and actually come out on the side of having Black people rooting for and identifying with what it is that you're saying, even though you're talking about some really tough topics, things that we didn't even expect to happen in that movie ended up happening.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the tone being able to switch really well between being very serious, like dealing with all the family issues, to the book, to the stuff with the book and the book being over exaggerative and all of that. And yeah, like it makes me appreciate American Fiction so much more now.
Yeah.
And to see how like Latanya said, find a tightrope that is.
Yeah. Shout out to the cast, first and foremost. I think they did a great job. Even shout out to Kobe, the director. I feel like this is a hard story to tell. It is ambitious. And I feel like there are definitely things that we could tweak to where people would probably appreciate it more. But I do think that you didn't leave yourself any favors by throwing out that trailer, because a lot of people just didn't go out to see the film. You know, just you got to grab people. And I think that was one of those things that was actually pushing people away, because a lot of people who watch these types of movies where there's magic involved, they've been clamoring for a replacement for that other story with that guy with the glasses and the lightning bolt. You know what I'm saying?
Chappelle, a lot of people were grabbed in this movie. Okay. Like, at least that.
A good handful, really. But twice, actually. Three times, I think I saw some just like hands on action there. But again, I think that when people say, oh, this is what I'm looking for, like Harry Potter, but make it black. You know, we saw when there was the Twitter topic, when all the people were like, oh yeah, black Hogwarts and stuff like that. People mm-hmm. were black primed Hogwarts. And ready for some mm-hmm. black people magic. And this is what they got. And so I think that yeah. you got to read the room. You got to read the room on timing for something like this, because black folks love their magic. You know, don't nobody love a good sleight of hand like us. And so just throwing that out there for the next time somebody wants to take on such a role, so ambitious as to making a movie, a fantasy movie about black folks' magic, because we are magical. Sorry if you didn't believe mm-hmm. it before, but we are, and it don't got nothing to do with white folks. So that being yeah. said,
yes,
LaTanya, thanks for coming back, man. How you? It's good to have you back.
It's always good to be here. Whenever you want to talk about anything absurd ever again, or something not absurd, something like very, very good and grippish, please yeah. let me know. Yeah, I'm just happy to be back here.
Happy to have you back. And could you tell everybody what you're working on? Because I believe you have a few irons in the fire right now.
Yeah, so catch up on a previous Recap Kickback episode with me where we did Shirley, the Netflix movie with Regina King. That was like just so much information about a historical figure that we should all know way more about. But I feel like we don't know nearly enough about. And then just keeping it in the family, I was on episode 100 of Crime Scene with Mari and Sarah, where we covered Crime Scene Berlin Nightlife mm-hmm. Killer.
Yep.
And that was a really, really good like true crime. And the things that are like linked in the show notes as well on that episode, the podcasts that Mari recommended, so good. I've been listening to all those. So if you've been enjoying mm-hmm. true crime things, also look out for a potential true crime podcast that I believe Sarah Carradine and myself are going to be doing for a Silent Podcast. We're going to be talking about, Under the Bridge, which is a new Hulu show starring Lily Gladstone, where they are investigating the disappearance of a young 14-year-old girl based on a true story. Check that out on Silent Podcast. Then I've got Top Chef coverage going on RHAP. That's all going very well and good. I'm enjoying this season. And then we're also on Silent Podcast. Naomi and I are going to be dropping The Sympathizer, the HBO Max show soon. So look out for that on Silent Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at LK Starks. You can follow me on TikTok at LaTanya K Starks. Or you can follow me on Instagram at Stormborn1222 for information on all these things and more.
Thank you, LaTanya. Again, happy to have you back all the time and would love Yay. To have you back soon. So keep your ears and eyes open for what's coming up that we can talk about. And then again, if you're listening to this and you want to hear more LaTanya, let us know. Get in the comments and say, hey, give us more LaTanya, because y'all demanded her the first time. She's back again, and we'd love to have her back for more. Mari, what about you? What do you have going on?
Coming up on Crime Scene on episode 101, we talked about, oh my god, drawing a blank, what Jennifer did.
I was just about to ask you if you talked about that movie, because Mari, it's something about the trailer makes me feel like whatever she did to some black folk. That's all I'm saying. I didn't watch it, but that's the vibe I'm getting.
She did it to her parents. And then she blamed black folk.
Yes. I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew she did this. I seen it in her
Netflix,
eyes.
Right?
On Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I just saw that.
We had a great guest. It dropped today. Rebecca Lavoie. And we talk about what Jennifer did.
I knew she did.
Not a spoiler. It's the name of the thing. She
did it.
She killed her parents and then tried to blame it on black people breaking into her house. So it's a very interesting documentary on Netflix. We had a great conversation about it. So go check out Crime Scene by going to robhousewebsite.com/crimefeed. I'll be going on maternity leave pretty soon. So there's no wrestling rehab, but we are on hiatus. But crime never stops. So Sarah will be continuing Crime Scene. She's going to have Sarah D. Bunting sit in as second chair. And she's going to have loads of fun guests covering what else but crime. So make sure you are still subscribed to Crime Scene even as I go. I had a great time with Jason and Asia last week over on the Married at First Sight podcast, where we talked about the reunion part two. I, like, no offense to y'all, but I haven't laughed that hard in a minute on a podcast. Making fun of these people on these messy ass dating reality TV shows, it's just so fun. And I hadn't done it in forever. So when we got up on there, we were definitely cutting up. So go to, you can go to robhaswebsite.com/loveatfirstsight feed to subscribe to Jason and Asia over there covering Married at First Sight and Love is Blind coverage, Ultimatum coverage, all that really, really good, fun stuff. I was also on the BB Can Roundtable with Taryn and Melissa this past Friday. BB Can 12, we finally had something to talk about. So just go to Rob Has a Podcast YouTube page to see us talk about that. That was fun. And that's it. I'm just getting in as much stuff as I can before, you know, in 2 weeks I'm tapping out. So definitely just go and follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's too like the number two, because no matter what, I will be tweeting. Like I will more likely be tweeting from my hospital bed. So you can always follow me there, and then wait for me to come back.
We will all be waiting on your return, Mari. Thank you so much again for being here and helping me every week. And of course, good luck with new baby. Hopefully we get a couple more podcasts out of you before they come and ruin our fun. In the meantime, I did guest on episode 99 of the Was It Good Though podcast, where we talked about The Nutty Professor. It is the most unhinged I've been on a podcast ever. So if you want to go hear Chappelle Unplugged, because I thought nobody was listening, go check that out. It is ratchet. It's wild. And it is so much fun. Those two people over there on that podcast are great. They're amazing. Leave a comment and tell them Chappelle sent you. Was It Good Though podcast, episode 99, The Nutty Professor. Also, you can catch me on RHAP talking about Deal or No Deal Island every week. I do the exit press. Every week when someone is eliminated from Deal or No Deal Island, we do a recap and we do the exit interview. And we got a special exit interview planned for a couple weeks. And not an exit interview per se, but somebody involved with the show wants to come talk to us. And it's a great time. So check that out on RHAP. Also, check out the Below Deck coverage every Wednesday with me and Sasha. This Wednesday, we'll be covering it live on YouTube at 3 p.m. Eastern. But you can catch us every week talking about Below Deck. And I believe Below Deck Med will be up next, and Sasha and I will be covering that as well. So check that out on the Bravo Rahapos feed for RHAP. Rob and I are talking about talking about Netflix shows on Nothing But Netflix. We're talking about Unlocked, a jail experiment, the crazy reality show on Netflix that has everybody talking about it. Rob and I got into the first two episodes, and we'll be finishing our coverage of that this week on Nothing But Netflix. So subscribe to Nothing But Netflix, follow Nothing But RHAP on Twitter to keep up with all of that. And then, of course, Recap Kickback, where we're doing all the rest of the podcasting. Sasha and I have more Bravo content coming for this very podcast. We're talking about Summer House Martha's Vineyard coming soon. We should have that podcast out to you this week. Gia and I will be talking about Abbott Elementary every other week, so we should have Abbott coverage for the most recent two episodes this week as well. And then before Mari pops, I think her, Tyrone, and myself, we need to get together to talk about the Boondocks. It just needs to happen. So a lot of content coming for Recap Kickback. And again, thank you all for listening. Check out recapkickback.com. Leave a 5-star review. Let us know what you think. Leave some comments. Follow us on all the social media. And then check us out every week as we bring you more content that I want to talk about with all the people I want to talk about it with. You don't got to go home. But we're done talking about this movie. So peace out. We will talk to you all later. Bye. Wait on life. I want to hold my breath. I'm going to get in my goddamn self.